Hey everyone, thanks for tuning back into the Why You Know Doctor podcast. Today, I have Kylie Ying on the podcast. She's both an engineer and scientist currently at MIT. Okay, so I'm aware the name of the podcast is Why You Know Doctor, which hints at highlighting more non-traditional career paths outside of the science, technology, engineering, and math related space. But to tell you the truth, I have a lot of love for the field of mathematics, science, medicine, engineering, and more. In fact, I love it so much that I've been teaching myself Python and other computer science courses over the last year or so. And that's actually how I stumbled upon Kylie's YouTube channel. I was just looking up some courses to explain some questions because I'm honestly not that good at computer science and I rely on YouTube videos to learn some of the more complex things. Usually with all the videos, it's generally men that are the ones that make the videos that are teaching those types of courses. So I was quite pleasantly surprised to find Kylie's videos at the top of the search results with tens of thousands of really great reviews. I ended up watching a lot of them, and of course her videos were fantastic. They're really, really educational. She did a great job explaining complicated tactics to someone like myself. So I was curious to just learn a little bit more about her journey. In this particular episode, we chat a lot about the lack of representation of Asian American women in the STEM space, what it's like attending MIT and especially being in a very male-dominated field, what her upbringing was like, and a little bit more about her YouTube channel and her mission to inspire more people, both male and female, of any background to pursue the STEM space. All of you really enjoy the episode, and without further ado, here's Kylie. Kylie, thanks for, of course, taking the time to hop on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited.
Yeah. And you know, so definitely want to hear a little bit more about your background and stuff like that. But I thought it's funny, actually, at least for the audience to know that I originally found out about you because I was on YouTube looking up like, some, I don't know how to do something in Python. And then your videos popped up and it was a video and you're like sharing about something and you were talking about cats or dogs or something. No, you like dogs, I believe, or something.
Yeah, I do like dogs.
And yours was one of the first videos that popped up for like some of the Python tutorials and you really did a great job. And I also thought it was kind of cool that like, you know, I actually hadn't seen, I feel like many of the other videos were just like, you know, it's like, I feel like computer science is a kind of like a male dominated space.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's how I found out about you. And it's pretty cool to actually get to talk to you and, learn a little bit more about you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm super happy to be here. And I'm also, I'm so stoked that my videos popped up when you searched for like Python stuff, because I feel like when I started my channel, I had issues with, you know, getting stuff to show up in search and whatnot.
You have a lot of subscribers now and a lot of views.
Yeah, no, it's been growing. I'm at now, I think like 11K or so subs, which is super awesome.
Cool. So aside from that, or like, I guess, what are all the things, you know, you do a lot more than obviously make these super helpful YouTube videos on computer science, on Python. So do you want to just share a little bit about kind of your background, kind of what you do or what you focus on?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm currently a master's student at MIT and I'm studying computer science. My thesis research focuses actually on particle physics and doing some machine learning stuff for particle physics. In my free time, I'm a part of the MIT driverless team, which is a student run team that works on autonomous race cars, which is super cool. So I basically program and like try to figure out how to drive this car by itself. And then a little bit about like my undergrad experience, my work experience. I did my undergrad at MIT as well, and I double majored in electrical engineering and computer science. That's one major. And then physics. So we call that EECS and then physics. And after I left undergrad, I went to a startup and I worked as a software engineer for a year. But then I kind of realized I wanted to do more math. So that's why I went back to school. And right now I'm back and I'm trying to figure out what like my next steps are.
Got it. It's really cool. And so you mentioned, so your master's right now, you mentioned you focus in particle physics and what?
So it's machine learning for particle physics.
So I broadly understand machine learning, but what is like the application or with like part, or what's the relation with like particle physics for people that are not so technical?
So I actually think that machine learning can like involve a variety of different, so many different domains. Machine learning can be applied to, if you go to Starbucks probably use machine learning to figure out how they should arrange their like space in order to have the optimal number of people and the optimal comfort for their customers. But we can also apply it to other areas such as physics, where I mean, basically, if you want me to talk about my project a little bit, when a particle collision happens, there's like streams of particles that fly off from the particle collision. We call these things jets. And when two heavy particles, so like if you think about a lead and a lead particle, when they collide, they create, it also creates this plasma. It's called the quark gluon plasma. And this is something that actually filled the universe in the first split seconds of the universe forming. And we would like to know more about this quark gluon plasma, right? We would like to know more about how the universe evolved, like what happened right after the Big Bang and so on. And the only place in the universe where this quark gluon plasma exists is inside of these particle colliders. But the issue now is before we can go in with like a detector and detect the actual properties of this plasma, the plasma disappears. So we have to use these jets in order to kind of figure out properties of this plasma. And now with these jets, so I'm working on like a super small like subspace within this entire big problem, right? But within for these jets, we want to know what type of like particle the jet comes from, because then we can tell more about how that jet like reacts to the plasma and so on. But there's no good way of actually figuring out like which particle it was. There's like no detector that we can use. So we can use something called unsupervised learning, which is, you have like some data, you put it through a classifier or you put it through your algorithm and then it spits out a label saying, oh, like this is this one and then this one, like this one comes from this one. Supervised learning is when you actually have a label for your data. So like if you have a picture of a cat, then you have a label that says cat. You have a picture of a dog, you have a label that says dog. If we remove these labels and we don't know what they are, then that's unsupervised learning.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I feel like there's so much, and this is even one reason why I. It's funny because like my dad, I was gonna become a medical student, and then my dad was like, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna move to LA and like do acting. He was like, no, you should study physics and you should study computer science. And it's funny because now I've done a lot of these other things, it's funny because I'm actually going back to kind of what I mean, even though my podcast is called like Why You Know a Doctor, I'm like super interested in computer science and into a lot of these things, because I just think it's like I just feel like everyone should like at least have a basic understanding.
And I think it's super interesting that you chose me to like come onto this podcast because I'm in such a domain where, you don't when you think of STEM, you're like, oh, that you don't think that's an age like unconventional Asian career path, right? So yeah, I think it's super cool to be here.
The truth of the matter is, I really love a lot of math and science, and even my agency, we're a life science agency, so we work with all scientists and a lot of companies that are, just all the top life science companies essentially. But yeah, then like today you hear so much all the time with like just like kind of buzz. Well, they feel like buzzwords if you don't. Well, they are buzzwords, like AI, machine learning, all these things. It's like in everything, and like, and I just kind of feel like I'm like even though I'm 30 now and like, I've always been fairly technical, but not from like a computer science standpoint. So like, I just kind of understand technical things because I used to like build computers and that type of stuff. And like, I'm good with computers, but it's like a whole nother realm with computer science. And now there's so many good resources online, like your classes, videos are really helpful. I use another thing called like Code Academy, which is pretty cool. They're like, do you know about it? Yeah.
I started with Code Academy in like my senior year of high school, yeah.
Okay, so is that so that's how you so when did you actually start computer science? Like, is that when you first started with like you first started with Python, or you started like when you're even younger, like learning some other things?
No, so actually, my dad had urged me to learn computer science, and I always kind of pushed back. I was like, nah, like I'm more interested in like this and that. Like, I want to go skating, like, whatever, right? So I always kind of pushed back against it. But the summer right before my senior year, I worked in this like lab for fun. And the other girl that was in the lab was like, oh, I'm gonna learn Python. And I was like, eh, whatever, like, I'll do it too. And this is also when I discovered edX or all these like free like Coursera and like the other free classes that you can take online. Yeah, so I found this Python class and I started doing that. I also learned about Code Academy through this girl who worked in my lab, and that's when I first started getting familiar with the different things that you can do with code. But I will say I didn't really actually learn to program and like to think in terms of like a programming mindset until I got to college. I did one semester, and then the second semester I was like, I want to explore computer science because it seems to be a like really big thing at MIT. Let's give it a try.
Do a lot of people that come into MIT already have like a really strong background in computer science? Like, did you feel like some of the classes, you know, it's like some people are just like they already have been doing this for like since they're like a little kid or something?
Okay, there definitely are people who are like that, but that's not the majority. I think that most people who end up studying computer science are like either, like me, like with very minimal basic background. Maybe some people did like AP computer science in high school, but I think a majority of people actually start in college.
That's really good to hear, because I feel like it'd be kind of intimidating where it's like I just feel like I'm sure these people exist, but it's like I just feel there's people that are like a 10-year-old kid that started like learning how to like
Yeah, they still scare
C,
me.
C++ and like all this stuff. I'm just like, yeah, I'm
Yeah.
never gonna be like I don't even know if it's worth starting, you know. But today I guess maybe we can go back a little bit and just a little bit about like, you know, your family and upbringing, because I think one of the big things that also stood out was just I'm curious about what your childhood experience was like, and like your parents, like what kind of parents were they like? Were they, because you know, you go to a really great university, and you know, it's like I feel like all Asian parents, like my dad, he was like, you have to go to Harvard, or it's like, you know, ever since like I'm a young kid. And but I wanted to know, like, were your parents very like pressuring? Were they easy on you? Like, what did that affect you?
Yeah, so I actually think that I don't think I had the like stereotypical Asian parents that are like, oh, you need to get straight A's, you need to go to like this school and that school, and you need to become a doctor. Like, I didn't have parents that were like that. My parents, when I was growing up and in elementary school, they were very focused on pursuing their own education. Like, my dad was doing a PhD when I was going through like my elementary school years, and my mom was in nursing school, and so they had a lot on their plate. They obviously had their stressors, and then there was me. I do remember like sometimes my mom would force me to play piano and go to Chinese school, and I'd be like, I don't want to do these things, and she would always say, but then you'll like regret it in the future, right? And like looking back, I'm glad that I know how to do these things and I know how to speak Chinese and so on. But other than that, like, I don't think they ever pressured me really to get good grades. I don't think they, at least from what I can recall, I think I've always been fairly competitive, and I've always kind of naturally, intrinsically wanted to do, to, I guess, achieve things and feel good about myself. And actually, like, I have a younger sister too. And I think that, especially with my younger sister, my parents in the couple of recent years, in these past few years, sorry, cut that part out. In these past few years, my parents have actually very much encouraged just being happy and doing whatever you're passionate about as long as you're happy.
With some of the things like figure skating, I can't remember if you said that you competed, but I know like you skate at a really high level. That must have been, I guess I'm trying to understand is like what, when you were growing up and your parents were like, you know, figure skating takes a huge amount of investment of time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I know that because my half sister, she, it's like she would go to figure skating practice like every single morning at like 5:30 in the morning, skate for like 2 hours. Like that was her, you know, she did that for like eight years, you know, and she was also competing and stuff. And like, I was like, I'm always been like wondering how she can just balance that plus school, plus like having a social life, plus like, you know, it's like all these things. It's like, I feel like it's hard.
For sure. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, no matter what things you're juggling, it just comes down to priorities. And that was something that I learned the hard way my sophomore year of college when I was like doing a million things and I was like, I'm miserable right now. Could I do all these things? Probably. But do I really want to? Not necessarily. And so you're asking this question about my skating journey back in high school. And I had something similar, but instead of, you know, at 5 a.m., I would go to school. And then at 3 p.m. right after school, I would go to the ice rink. Sometimes my coach would pick me up and drive me. Sometimes my parents would drive me. And I would go skate for 2 hours. I would come home, do homework, and then go to sleep. And that was pretty much my life in high school. Like, I didn't really have too much of a social life until my senior year when I, like, you know, my senior spring, I started playing hockey. I was in college at that point. I was taking like easier classes. I didn't have first period and so on. So I think that, especially when you don't have as many, like in college, when you get to dictate more of your own life, it's easier to get trapped in, oh, I need to do this, 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 and this, at least in my mindset, because I'm like such an overachiever. And, you know, like throughout college, there were times when I would be playing hockey and figure skating and taking five classes and like trying to hang out with people and doing this and that and whatever. And I want to go back to what I said at the beginning, or at the, I want to go back to what I said earlier about priorities and how what I noticed when I was taking five classes is, yeah, I could do these five classes and I could probably do well in them, but then that means I have to take time away from something else. And you can't, like, nobody can do everything, right? Like everybody, whatever you are doing, something else has to give. And I think that's like my biggest message here is just like, you can do these things, but you have to, you just have to know that you can't do everything maybe at the caliber that you want to.
How do you prioritize the kind of like, what's like, what are the most important things to work on though? Cause sometimes I feel like that's a challenge in itself. Also just like working hard versus like working smart, because, you know, that's another thing. It's like, sometimes if you're not working smart, it's like, it might just take, you can work hard all you want, but it's like, it just takes forever to get something done and not, maybe not even achieve as good of a result. Do you think about those things consciously?
I think I try to optimize for my time. Yeah. I think that, you know, if I can't figure out a problem and I can't, I think I've gotten very good at like Googling in these past few years. I think I've gotten very good, not at like searching for the exact question, but trying to figure out similar questions and then apply those topics to whatever I'm trying to solve, or like trying to find hints on how to solve the problem or ideas on how to solve the problem through Google. And if I'm at a point where I'm like totally stuck, I'm still in school, right? Like I can go and ask my supervisor if it's something to do with research, or I can go to office hours or whatever. And I think that these time, like, I think it's pointless to just sit around and wait for something to happen, because if you've worked on something for 2 hours and nothing's happening, like chances are, you know, Newton's law, like whatever stays in motion, like unless acted upon by another force or something like that. Can you tell I'm a physics major? but But I'm just saying, like, something, you need some sort of spark, right, to actually drive that, like, inspiration. And I think that's a lot of times where people get stuck, because they're like, oh, like, I need to solve this, but then they don't go and ask for help. And I think just another thing about time management is, I think I'm a very organized person, like, mentally. I think that I compartmentalize pretty well. And so when it's time to do something, I can kind of push away everything else and focus on that one task and then switch gears for the next task. And I think prioritizing all these things, I think that's hard to say, because I do think that it's somewhat of an emotional thing. Like, it's all about what's important to you, right? If I sit down and I'm like, okay, I want to take two classes, like, and learn all these things, but I also want to hang out with my friends. Like, you have to know what's, you have to know what you aren't willing to give up. And for me, one of the things I'm not willing to give up is, like, my happiness. And I know that a lot of my happiness comes from hanging out with people. And so I will purposely go and make time for that and prioritize that. Whereas for some other people, yeah, I mean, for some other people, maybe, like, the thing that they don't want to give up is learning.
And that makes, and certainly, like, that also is a big driver of happiness. I used to always, like, you know, when I was younger, I also was like this, like, it was like a super type A overachiever. And I think I still am, honestly, like, some of those things, they just stick with you. But, like, I feel like over the years, it's like, it's funny, because it's like, when I was younger, and even still now, it's like, you know, I enjoy to hang out with people, but also it's like, I derive a lot of happiness just from, like, being alone and knowing that I, like, learned something, you know, whether it's like just, like, messing around and doing, like, Code Academy courses. I'm just like, it makes me so happy to be like, oh, like, I'm moving towards something. I'm not really sure what, but, like, I'm learning something. But with that topic, I wanted to ask, what do you think makes you, you described yourself as an overachiever. So what do you think made you like that? Or is that just, was there anything specific that you think? Because sometimes it's like your parents, but sometimes it's something else, like, you know.
So, I mean, that's a great question. It's something that I'm still trying to think about. It's something that I talk to with my therapist all the time. Like, I'm still trying to figure out these things for myself. But as far as I can remember, like, I do think that, I do think that part of it is just being raised in, like, an Asian culture where, like, your parents prioritize what you accomplish and they praise you for what you accomplish, right? Or they might like punish you for what you, like, fail to accomplish. So I do think that might be something that's part of it. Like, as you're growing up, you know, if your parents are saying good job for getting an A, or boo, you're like, you got a B, like, you're definitely going to want, humans are, like, reward driven, right? And I think that you're definitely going to want to seek those achievements that get the, oh, good job. And I also think that when I was growing up, one of my best friends at the time, her name was Maria. She was also a figure skater, and she was also an Asian girl like me. And we were both in the same math class. We were both in, like, some of the same English classes. And I think that friendly competition there, drove a lot of just both of us wanting to kind of, you know, at one point in PE, we were running the beep test, where you have to, like, run back and forth according to the beep. And we would constantly be breaking each other's records. And so I think that there was some sort of competition between us that really spurred us to go on and achieve, you know, these big accomplishments.
From what I hear and understand, it seems like, you know, you naturally are quite maybe competitive, or maybe because of nurture, you know, you're, you know, very focused on overachieving. And obviously you've had, like, really good grades. You go to a great school. I'm wondering, are there any, like, what are some of the struggles or the challenges? Because I hear a lot of, I mean, maybe it is that easy for you, but like, you know, do you have any, like, struggles or, like, things that have been really difficult too in this process so far to where you're at?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, like, I think that with a lot of just people in general, like people who are at a place that seems, you know, lofty and like, and like people who just seem accomplished, like you only see their accomplishments, right? Like you don't really see all their failures. And like, and I have a long list of failures, trust me. I think that like, yeah, I mean, I think that everybody fails, and I think that failing is necessary to like self-improvement. Personally, I'm a big fan of self-reflection and trying to figure out like what I can do to constantly make myself better.
Got it. And maybe that ties into, maybe it doesn't, but you mentioned that you talked to a therapist, and I'm happy to hear that, because I think more and more, there's less and less mm-hmm. stigma around that. And I think people are more mm-hmm. like now open to talking mm-hmm. to therapists. And I know how yeah. much it's helped a lot of people that's really close to me,
yeah.
that are really close to me. Is that something that you've been doing for a long time? Or is it something that you started to do recently? And how has that helped mm-hmm. you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I started going to therapy maybe halfway through my college undergrad years, just because I was having like a really bad time one semester, and I was like, I need to just talk to somebody. And I think that you're right. There's this like huge stigma about mental health, just talking about mental health, like going to therapy, like, oh, if somebody goes to therapy, does that mean that there's something wrong with them? Right. But like, that's not true. I think that therapy is a really great tool for just self-improvement and self-reflection. I think that, you know, I think that going to therapy has made me think about myself a lot more critically and thought about what makes me tick, what makes me vulnerable, and how can I go forward recognizing these things and trying to either take advantage of them or appreciate them more, or at least just not shying away and being uncomfortable with them. And I think that therapy is also a really great tool for people to just have somebody to be completely open and honest with. And, you know, my therapist asks me questions all the time that make me think and go, oh, like maybe it helps me understand more of myself.
Yeah, it's nice sometimes just to bounce some honest ideas with someone else and hear their view. Because I think a lot of times in that, just like, you know, we realize things ourselves, which it's like, unless you vocalize it or write it down, it's mm-hmm. you might not be aware of it, you know?
Yeah. And I think that in like Asian culture specifically, it's very much stigmatized. And I think that I was actually talking to my roommates about this yesterday. I think in Asian cultures, you're brought up saying like, oh, look at what I've accomplished, not this is how I feel. And so we kind of shy away from expressing those emotions and whatnot. And that's actually something that I was just thinking about yesterday. And I was like, how do I become better at voicing my emotions, at letting myself feel emotions? Because sometimes I feel almost like ashamed for feeling, not ashamed, but I feel weakness in emotions, you know? And so that's something that I'm like now trying to improve upon. And I actually came up with this list of like comfort zone challenges that I think I'm going to go out and do.
What are, is there any like comfort zone, like what type of challenges are they? Like, is there anything that you're willing to share? I'm just curious, like what?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think one thing is I care a lot about what other people think sometimes. And so one of my challenges is like, go sing in the rain. Blast a speaker, put on Natasha Bedingfield and just go sing in the rain. Another thing is like, dress up and just take yourself out to dinner. Because I think part of me almost feels guilty for not being modest sometimes. Like just, if I wear makeup, if I wear something that I'm like, ooh, I look good in that. Sometimes I'll be like, ooh, should I like have to dial it down? Like I feel uncomfortable doing these things. Yeah.
I wonder if that's something that also comes from kind of upbringing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I used to also maybe, yeah, it's like, I think I even told you in an earlier call, it's like, I know something I'm not very good at is receiving compliments actually.
Yeah, me too. It's like, I don't even know how to accept it. And sometimes I don't process it the right way, right? Like I don't, sometimes when people give me a compliment, I'm like, ooh, that's a reward. Like I have to keep it. It's reinforcement, right? For what you're doing. And that automatically, I think, tunes into my overachievement mentality. And I'm like, oh, I have to do more of that. But also I did want to mention like this thing about kind of being ashamed to like look good. I also think that especially in STEM, being like a woman in STEM, one of the things that I find is that there's this like, there's also this assumption that if you look good, like you're not very smart, right? Or if you're smart, you like probably don't look good. Yeah. And I think that that also ties kind of into this aspect of the way that I think about myself and how I dress and how, you know, I don't like wearing makeup because I'm like, oh, this is just the way I look. But I think these are things that I want to work on. And I think that, you know, I think that now it's about time to kind of ditch the hoodies and start just kind of, because I always do feel more, this might be a little contradictory, but I do feel more confident when I do look good, but I'm kind of self-conscious about looking good, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so I think these are things that I want to work on and just getting comfortable with these things and trying to overstep that barrier of, hey, like if you want to try to pursue like these difficult STEM fields, you shouldn't try to also look good. Like, why?
Yeah. And I think that's almost, I'm curious how much gender plays into it. Cause I feel like as a guy, it's like not like, it's like if you look really good and you're a great like whatever, like really good computer science programmer or whatever, I don't mm-hmm. like, do you feel like that's as much for like people care as much if you're a guy, or is it only for like females? It's like, oh, if you're like actually really smart and good at what you do, you're like not supposed to maybe like look as good or something. Because I don't know, like,
yeah, I mean, from my perspective personally, I think it weighs a lot more on women and how, just like how society also, I guess, like just the way that society kind of makes women, and I don't know how to say this, but just the society's perception of women as, you know, if you look really good, if you try really hard to look good, then, you know, then they assume that that's all there is to you. And yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why to me, like it, I mean, maybe it's because I'm a woman. I see these things more and I'm like, and in my head, it's more of like, oh, if you're a woman, like you can choose one or the other, but you're not a guy, you can't do both. Yeah. I don't know why in my head it's in particular just like for women.
Yeah, it's funny also in America, I think it's, I wonder if it's an issue. I mean, I'm just thinking from like some experiences, just like being in France where like everyone dresses up, and I don't think people, yeah, if you dress up, think that you are like not, if you're a woman, you dress up and look really nice. And, you know, I don't think people, I don't know, I'm not French, but I don't think people think that you're like shallow. It's also about how you dress too. It's like, yeah, there's like a way that you can dress that's like kind of really tacky potentially, right? Mm-hmm. And that might be like, you know, so, mm-hmm. but, you know, I think it's also just about the taste too, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also like, I do think that, like why is there this association with how you dress and how you think, right? That's something that I've actually been wondering on my YouTube channel. I'm like one of the ideas that I had for my brand was like, it's okay. Like these two things shouldn't be associated, right? Like why are they associated? Why does society like put these two things together when they're so independent of one another? They're so, I mean, independent is not the right word, disjoint, right? If we're talking probability terms, they're two disjoint events, but why do we associate them with one another?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think probably, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some part has to do with just media representation. Mm-hmm,
sure. Yeah, and I'm not expecting you to have an answer, right? I'm just kind of going on a rant here and saying like.
But I also feel bad about like, you know, you mentioned something about just like feeling or wanting to be humble and those things. I do think that sometimes like my mom kind of ingrains some of these things. She's like, yeah, if you have something nice, like don't be too flashy, like, you know, like, and then it kind of carried over into my like, adulthood where it's like, I kind of feel bad. It's like, let's say like, you know, I've worked really hard. I earned some, it's like, when I was working as an actor in LA, I leased mm-hmm. like a BMW. It was not that expensive. And I was working a lot. And like, so I was like, you mm-hmm. know, I had this like really old Toyota and like, I'm going to lease this car. And I like felt like ashamed to like drive it. Cause I was around a lot mm-hmm. of actors mm-hmm. that were just like, you know, but it's not like I came from money. Like we were on, like I came from no money. I moved to LA with zero money. So it's not like I had anything given to me. It's like, I just worked really hard and like earned something, I like didn't even want to like, I literally would like go out of my way to make it so people didn't see that mm-hmm. had like, and a BMW is not even that nice of a car, but at the, you know, but it's like, it's not like a Ferrari or something, but I just was like, people are going to think something about me.
Right. And I have a similar experience too. Like, for example, when people ask me what school I go to, I say, oh, like I go to school in Boston, and they're always like, oh, what school? And I'm like, oh, like one in Cambridge. Like which one? MIT. Oh, and I get that experience a lot. And I also, and sometimes like when I meet people, like I think I have a lot of like accomplishments in my head, but I don't tell anybody any of them. I'm just like, oh yeah, like I'm studying computer science and, you know, I'm working on this like really cool project, and that's all I'll say. But there are so many different layers of me that I think are cool about myself, you know, but I won't tell these to people.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. That's really interesting that you bring it up, man. And I'm sure there's some, this is, I think to some degree it is cultural, because, you know, when I think about a lot of, you know, other people, it's like, they're fine just talking all about themselves. And I don't want to be like that, because I find it kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how to like analyze this, but you know, it's like, I kind of like the way that I am in that regard, mm-hmm. but I don't think that like, I don't think it's good to feel uncomfortable to like take a compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, I think there's some line there where it's like, you know, someone gives you a compliment and it's genuine, then I think it's nice just to say thank you, you know, and like, that's something I've always worked on, you know. So that's really interesting. I wanted to ask also just on the topic of like being in a very male dominated mm-hmm. space in STEM. You mentioned on your YouTube channel something that stuck out to me, and you said that, you know, like one thing is you wanted to, I can't remember the exact way you phrased it, but generally just like promote more like women in, you know, in the STEM field, because it's like, it's very underrepresented. What makes you passionate or like think about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, first, like, I think one of the things just about this podcast is the message that representation matters. And seeing somebody who, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be an actress, but there were almost no like Asian actresses in Hollywood. And in my head, that registered to me as, oh, like you can't get there because nobody like you has ever gotten there. And I think that that's a common theme for a lot of things. I think that, like, I truly think that representation matters for inspiring young kids, because when you're young, you don't really know how to think deeper, right? When you're young, you kind of, you look at something and you say, oh, like, you know, you look at a circle, you're like, oh, this is a circle, right? And you look at a toy and you're like, oh, this looks like kind of like a circle. And so I think that when you're young, these connections start forming, and it ingrains into your brain, like you can do the things that other people that look like you can do, and like don't even think about these like other things. And so I think with my YouTube channel, one thing that that I had kind of noticed after I made like a couple of videos that started getting more clicks than just like my friends, a couple of those videos, a lot of people were saying like, wow, and like, you're a girl, like thank you for, you know, inspiring me, or like,
it's really cool that people said those things.
Yeah. And so after that started happening, I was thinking to myself, like, why am I different than these other YouTubers out there? And I just started thinking, like, most of these YouTubers in the tech or science areas, most of these YouTubers are male. And you know, it is a very male-dominated industry, but why, but how can I change that? How can I encourage women to go and pursue this, to not be scared by it, and to say like, hey, like, if I can do it, so can you. And I think that's like the big message that I'm trying to send here is that, like, I don't, like, who cares what anybody has told you? Like, you can go do these things and you can learn these for yourself as long as you are like intrinsically interested by it. And as long as you're passionate and you want to learn something, go and learn it.
Yeah. And also it's kind of that like feedback loop where it's like, if you like, I feel like the people that are like really, like if you go into a new subject and, I mean, I just think it's like, if you're confident, normally like, then you like take more risks and you learn more and then like reinforce the like snowball effect. Right. But it's like, I think it can be quite intimidating. I imagine, obviously I'm a male, so I don't know, but I imagine it's like, if you go into like a university or whatever in a space where there's not many people that look like you, it can be a little bit more like, you know, just maybe intimidating, or maybe you're, you wonder if you're out of place. Right.
Yeah. And actually one thing that I think about all the time, going off of what you just said, one thing that I think about all the time is like, if I'm in a room where like the majority of people in that room are men, that's something that immediately stands out to me, whereas it might not if you're a guy in that room, right? You might just be like, oh, these are people, like they're like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you don't notice it.
Yeah, yeah. It's also kind of, it's also the kind of the same, like when I see an Asian actor on TV, I'm like, oh, they're Asian. But like most other people are just like, oh, like that's just another actor. And I've talked to my friends about this and they're like, oh, like I never noticed those things. And I'm like, I always notice those things. And so I think that just being conscious about that is, I mean, it influences how you think. It influences the degree to which you're willing to take risks and so on. I mean, not necessarily in the example of like being the only woman in a room, other than maybe like you have a question and you don't want to speak up, right? Like that also instills some self-doubt in you. And that self-doubt, I think, you know, I think that might be the most toxic thing about just society and society standards and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's the same for like let's just say like in sports and stuff like that. Or, you know, I went to school at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and like, you know, I would always notice, I'm like, oh, I'm like literally the only Asian person in this entire bar. Like, or like, you know, it's like things that like I would just like really be very self-aware of. And then in other situations, in that situation, I don't know what, I mean, I don't think I like felt self-doubt or something, but sometimes it's just like you just stick out, you know, and then you like are like thinking like, what do people think of me? And I don't know, it's like you go down a rabbit hole. Sometimes I think recently in the last few years I feel like also there's like an advantage now where it's like, actually this probably is a separate subject, but I just feel like in the past I used to like feel kind of I don't want to say like ashamed, but like, you know, I stuck out. I kind of felt like maybe I was like more just self-aware that like, you know, I was kind of one of the few people in, you know, in a group or whatever. But actually it's funny because as I've gotten later in life, it's like now like a lot of times to a huge advantage in a lot of certain things, or like I feel like people based on my appearance and because I'm unique and because I'm this and I stick out, that I actually get like a confidence boost.
Interesting. I can't say that's happened to me yet, but
yeah, I just think like in some things where like there is an expectation that like, and this might be also just mental, you know, but it's like when I'm today at my company, if I'm presenting to a lot of you know, it's like we're a kind of a tech company, but a digital marketing company that has a lot of technical components to it. And like when we're doing big meetings to like CEOs of, you know, enormous companies, or if I go on site, let's say on site to a company and like I meet all the CEOs of like a $1 billion company, it's like, you know, I actually feel more confident because of the fact they're like, oh, like he's Asian. Asian people are like good at like probably generally pretty smart, good at like doing like tech stuff. And I'm like the only Asian person. So actually I really stick out, but then I like play it to my benefit.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that there's two sides of every coin, right? Like for that example, like, I mean, because I'm Asian, I guess I've been kind of able to leverage that and like, And I mean, as I said earlier, being in STEM is not a like an Asian like field. So I think that definitely helps in a way, and how people expect, nobody expects me to be dumb because I'm Asian.
I don't claim to know the, whatever, but I've thought about a lot of same things
Yeah,
myself. And I do
yeah.
feel like in retrospect, over the last 5 years, I've grown a
Yeah.
lot and I just don't care
Yeah.
as much about those things.
Yeah, but I also do want to mention that I think that there is some sort of double-edged sword with whether or not you are, with like this example that you gave, like, oh, he's Asian, so he has to be smart. Like, there is a double-edged sword there, right? Because when you're growing up, if people constantly tell you that, then you, if you don't do something that categorizes you as smart, then you think to yourself, oh, have I failed? Have I failed at like my Asianness? Which shouldn't happen, right? But that's something that happens, and
I think there's
yeah.
also like a degree of I think I was just thinking that the negative side of it is like when I like play sports, and I feel like as a kid always like when I grew up like people just assumed like maybe I wasn't athletic, maybe I wasn't good at stuff, but as a result I kind of had a chip on my shoulder. And then I realized after time, I was like, wait, like I am like pretty fast. I'm faster than like the vast majority of like I mean, substantially above average. I'm not like a freak athlete, but it's like the whole time when growing up, I thought I was like not athletic and stuff like that, which is
Interesting.
funny. And because
Yeah.
like, you didn't have many Asian people that was represented in sports or whatever. But I started to try harder. So I started to go to the gym, and then now, I do a lot of sports and I go to CrossFit and those things. And always I'm just like, I'm like literally the only Asian person. So I better like try extra hard, and like, but and as a result, then you kind of the feedback cycle, then you do become better and better,
That's interesting because I don't know if I've ever had those thoughts of like being unathletic growing up. I think that athleticism was always something that I kind of was like, oh yeah, like I'm naturally just kind of like I like playing sports, I like going and running, I like doing these things. And whenever I went back to like whenever I visited family in China, they if somebody like couldn't swim, I would like teach them how to swim because I used to be on swim team and this and that. Although I will say, and like for example, figure skating is a very like white and Asian dominated field. So like I've never felt out of place figure skating. I think that with figure skating, I never really had the experience of being of feeling like conscious because I looked a certain way, right? Because I mean, it's a white Asian dominated, female dominated sport. But my senior of hockey or my senior of high school, I decided that I wanted to try ice hockey. And so then now this is suddenly like probably primarily white male dominated. I started playing and I was so bad at first. And then, I made friends, I got along with people, but I think that there was this part of me that had wondered, like, why didn't I play hockey earlier? Like, why did my parents never send me to play hockey? And I think part of that is this like conventional Asian sports like type of dialogue where most people go into like swimming or figure skating, gymnastics, dance if you're a girl or, something like that. And you don't really see, volleyball. You don't really see Asian girls playing hockey too much.
What was that experience like? Were you you had a good time?
Yeah, I had a good time. It was fun. I pushed some people into the boards. Back in high school, especially when you're like pretty much the same size as people for the most part, it's like pretty fun. But then I went to college and I was like, oh, I'm gonna try to play on the men's hockey team. And then that was people were a lot faster and bigger than I was. But yeah, I made some friends though. It was fun.
What about so with the YouTube channel, how much time, like where are you at with that? Like how much time do you spend on that, and where do you want to take that to?
Yeah, so I've probably had my channel for around a year and 3 months or so by now. I started out kind of wanting to just do like tech projects, and it's kind of evolved into like sometimes I do tutorials, sometimes I talk about algorithms, sometimes I do some like vlogs on projects that I'm currently working on. So there are a couple of different things in there. But I think ultimately I've been having the most fun with like describing these algorithms. Like the most recent video I did was about the superhuman poker AI algorithm. And I found like working on that, reading about that was super interesting and super fun.
So you explain, so okay, so those are, that's an algorithm that already exists and then you're breaking it down. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah, well, I tried to actually like implement it back in January because I did a class called Poker Bots. Yeah, but I learned a lot about it. I thought it was really cool, and I think a lot of people would be interested in how, you can train a computer to beat a human playing poker, which is a game of what most people think is luck.
And also a combination of maybe like bluffing and stuff like that. Are we talking about hold'em or like what?
Yeah, like Texas Hold'em. So to me, I think that poker is a game of skill with a little bit of luck.
Yeah, I think it's skill with like, because there's actually because then there's odds and probabilities for sure, but then there's the component of like the
Psychology.
human element of bluffing.
Yeah, exactly. And so you put all these things together and you're like, how would a computer ever be able to figure out what a human is thinking? Or like how would a computer ever be able to adapt to a human's changing psychology? Right.
What are some of the most interesting things right now that are like in this like AI machine learning space that are that you're interested in?
Yeah, I mean, definitely this principle. So, this poker bot, how the algorithm that it uses is from a domain of computer science called reinforcement learning, which, as we previously said, supervised learning is when you have a picture and then you have a label associated with it. Unsupervised learning is when you have a picture or like words or something, but you don't necessarily have that label. Now, but there is like a right and wrong answer, right? But in reinforcement learning, now what this is like, for example, if you think about playing a game, you can have certain actions like up, down, left, right, if you're playing like Pac-Man. But how now you're trying to train a computer to recognize what actions to take. Now, there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer, right? It's just whatever gets you the highest rewards. So reinforcement learning is training based off of these rewards, not necessarily an answer. And it's every single action that you do take influences the next state of the game and so on. And I'm currently taking a reinforcement learning class, having a lot of fun with that, trying to figure out what my final project will be. And I mean, I just think that it's like such a cool domain of computer science because this is where all these AIs are coming from. It's where this like chess AI that beat humans comes from. It's where poker bots come from. It's where bots that play Go and Mario and whatever come from.
I heard sometimes like you can't even like if you were to like look at the algorithm, it's like it's hard to even understand like how the algorithm is functioning because
Oh,
it's like
yeah.
almost like a black box because it's been like I don't know if it's through reinforcement learning or through whatever. It's just like
Yeah.
it just got there, you know, so it works, but
Yeah.
like people aren't even
Yeah.
sure like exactly how it works at that
Yeah.
point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if people out there want to dive more into this black box thing, like you should go and study some machine learning, because that is one of the biggest issues with machine learning is if you have like a neural net and you spit out an answer, like you don't know what goes on inside of that neural net. You don't really have a model. It's just a bunch of numbers spitting out like a number.
Yeah, I remember it's because I was watching a course on Coursera and like they were saying for like radiologists, it's like it's like they know that like you know for one thing of detecting like I don't know if it's like lung cancer or like a pierced lung or something like you know it's like we know it works and like it gives a good you know reading of like probability if someone has that issue or not, but like no one really you know you can't really like validate it or I'm not sure if they you know. And then they made like a heat map, so at least they can know like where like the algorithm or whatever was looking at in the general vicinity to be like, well, that is what influenced the decision. That was really cool. For someone interested in getting into computer science, and some like the like, what would you recommend? What would be some good languages to start off learning, or just where do you even start?
Yeah, so I think that learning computer science is a lot like learning a language, right? You have to learn the words, but you also have to learn how to put together the words and how to create thoughts using those words, right? And so, I mean, definitely you would have to start by learning the words if you want to learn how to speak a language. I think the best, in my opinion, the easiest language to learn to get a company to just like get familiar with computer science, I think, is Python, because Python's a lot like English. And you don't have to worry about like the semicolons and the brackets and this and that. So I would say start with Python. It's what I started with. It's what a lot of people at MIT start with. And, you know, a little self plug, if you want to learn Python, I've got a couple of videos on my channel about
Yeah,
that.
we'll tag it on the when we share it, because the
That's
videos were great,
awesome.
you know,
Thank
they're
you.
really good.
But yeah, so I mean, I would start there, and I know that like a lot of the introductory classes, you learn about how to code up games and stuff, which I also have on my channel. But once you think you have like some of this logic down, like when you start coding up these bigger games such as Hangman and Sudoku and Minesweeper, once you start coding these things, you kind of get like a small idea of how bigger algorithms work. But I think that computer science in its essence is really about these algorithms and about data structures and things like that. And so then we get into this computer science way of thinking. And at this point, you might want to consider taking a class about algorithms or data structures, just basic 101 stuff. You'll learn how, like, given a list of sorted items, what's the best way to search for something in that list? Or what's the best way to sort a list of items? Because there are many answers to that. And when you have like,
Just to understand, first with Python, like learning Python, you can understand like how you technically can like the language like sort something, and then it's about learning how you actually make it effective and like how to sort it in the most valuable way. Is that kind of?
No, so I think that these are two disjoint things. Like there's one that's like learning the language, and then there's one that's learning like the how to express your th like if you're thinking about learning French, for example, because I know you are, like you learn French, you learn the syntax and stuff. That's all one thing, right? But for you to actually speak in French and put together a cohesive sentence, like that stuff is already like in your brain, right? Like you've already internalized how to express your thoughts. That's the second part of it. So that first part is creating these like the first part is understanding Python and the syntax of Python and actually writing scripts. But now the second part is how to think algorithmically and how to think in terms of like how to think as a programmer. Because one thing in computer science is your computer is good at doing exactly what you say, but not good at interpreting like what you're thinking, right? So the second part of that is to start understanding how to translate your thoughts into code, how to start writing these algorithms, how to, you know, sort things in the most efficient way, because that's also something else is like efficiency is a big part of computer science. Yeah.
Cool. And then, so let's say once you've learned all those things, I'm just trying to even understand like a career track or like what the day-to-day looks like if someone does get into this space. They spend, you know, a couple of years learning, getting really good at Python, and then some of the, you know, algorithms and stuff like that that you're talking about. What does it look like after that? For example, you mentioned that you're working on, I think something with like autonomous driving or vehicles or something. Like, what actually does that mean? Like, what are you doing? Like, what, you know, not, it doesn't have to get too in the weeds, but I'm just curious, like, is it just like,
So to answer that more specific question first about the autonomous driving, I'm working on specifically the planning and controls team. So the pipeline of autonomous driving goes kind of like this. Basically, we have a car, right? This car doesn't have a driver inside the car, but we want it to go around the track and maybe avoid obstacles or like other cars, like get rewards if there's any sort of reward placed on the track. So what does this whole pipeline look like? First, we have to actually sense what's around us, right? So that's called perception. Perception is like the cameras, the radars, LIDARs, which are laser radars, basically. And these kind of figure out this map around you. And then you go into localization. So based on what's around you, where do I think I am? Or where does the card think it is? And then you can say, okay, given where I think I am, let's plan a path. So where do I want to go? Now that's planning. And then once you plan a path, you actually have to get the car to move. And that part is controls. Controls is getting the car to follow that path. So I work primarily on planning and controls. And what I do for planning, the first part that we have to do is come up with the algorithm to plan out this path. Because if we plan out something suboptimal when we're racing, I mean, other people are going to win, right? And we can't crash into cars. We can't go off the track. So these are all things that we have to account for. And then we go over to controls, and currently I'm actually working on a parameter estimation project for controls. What that means is we kind of figure out what inputs to pass the car. So either which way you steer, left or right, how much, by what degree, or do you press on the gas or the brakes, how much. We figure out these inputs based on a model of the car, right? And so you can think of this model as like the equations that you learn in high school physics. Like if you throw a ball, there are equations that govern how the ball will move. Well, there are also equations that govern how this car will move. But the thing is, like, such as when you're throwing a ball, there's this constant of gravity, right? In this car, there are a couple other constants that you have to worry about. Like how much do your tires slip? What's the friction there? And so on. And so, like, I'm trying to right now figure out all of these parameters based on some data that we've collected in the past. But what this pipeline looks like, it's a lot of like brainstorming, like how can we improve on what we currently have and then coding it up. So putting those ideas into code and testing it to make sure it works and then seeing it run on the car.
What kind of skill sets do you need outside of like the knowledge of algorithms and computer science to actually, because it seems like you're talking about some stuff that's related to physics with mathematics. Like, mm-hmm. Do these other disciplines really?
So I think that it really depends on what you want to work on. Because if you want to be a software engineer for, you know, a web app, that's going to be very different than being a software engineer for like a quantitative trading firm, which is going to be very different than a software engineer for NASA, right? So it really depends on like which area you work in, and then you'll learn the things of those areas, in those areas. And what I want, like, I think that like it's not possible for everybody to learn everything, right? For me, for controls, I don't really know, honestly, too much about. Like, I didn't derive this model of the car by myself. Like, I found it online because somebody wrote a paper on it. And then I'm using that, like, for the stuff I'm doing. I will say that depending on which area you want to go into, there might be some math that you have to do. Like, there in machine learning, there's a lot of linear algebra and derivatives and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I have to learn those things again.
Yeah, I mean, but for basic coding, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of times it's just like understand what's going on. Like if you actually want to implement a neural net or something, you don't really have to know what's going on behind the scenes. Like there are packages in Python that'll just do it all for you. But I think that like if you're using something, you should understand how it works, right? And if you want to understand like the basis of a lot of machine learning topics, a lot of them are derived from mathematics.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's like every time like I started with the Coursera course and then I was like, mm-hmm. I was watching, I was like, oh wait, like I really need to like learn Python to be able to understand this. And so I spent like all these hours uh-huh. like going through all these Python courses and I went back to that. And then during the Python course, it was like, well, you should actually have a pretty good solid understanding of like the command line. So I had to take another course for that course.
Oh my gosh.
I just keep going deeper and deeper and I'm going all the way back up. And then I just realized again, you know, like.
That's something that we call depth first search in programming. It's when you follow a path all the way to the end and then you like go back up and then take the next route and so on until you finally get to where you want to be.
I'm taking all these other courses on like machine learning, and that's like starts to give me all these like different like things from like linear algebra and like probabilities and like stuff like that. I'm like, oh, why do you find a course on that now?
I mean, I respect that you're going and finding these courses, because sometimes if it were me, I would just be like, oh, like I took it once. I will probably know what it's talking about as soon as it picks up again. I'll probably pick it up along the way.
What, just a side question. What do you think is, you know, like, I feel like in our parents' generation, there's a few big things that really changed everything. I think the internet was one thing. I think before then, like electricity was like a big thing. What do you think, like in our lifespan, do you have any thoughts on like what might be like a big thing that really changes the game?
Yeah. You know, I think that, I mean, I'm going to be cliche here. I think cryptocurrency is going to be one thing. I think that, I do think AI and just, you know, self-driving cars is going to be something. I think that in the future, like, you probably won't need a driver's license anymore if you want to get from place to place. No, but I do think a lot of, I mean, I think that one reason why I do find reinforcement learning, machine learning, this field so interesting is because, like, I do think that it's coming. Like, I do think that, you know, I do think that a lot of menial tasks and a lot of like logic and things that are currently human done, I think can be replaced by machines very soon.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's why I want to learn computer science. I don't want to get left behind.
Yeah. And I think that for me, like one of my biggest motivators for wanting to go into this field is also just because I think it's super cool and I love all the puzzles that come with it, you know?
Yeah. The puzzles are really fun. It's like, it just kind of keeps you thinking. Because I feel like a lot of times, I feel like when some people get to their 30s, sometimes it's like, I've accomplished a lot of things I want to accomplish. And like, but it's like kind of like, you don't, I feel like some people are like, okay, I'll just take the back seat now and just like relax and stuff. But then it's like, I just feel like, you know, you still have a lot of life to live. I mean, so much has happened in the last 5 years. If I spent 5 years and really just spent a couple hours, like an hour a day, a couple hours a day learning like computer science and then some other courses in 5 years, that's like a lot of like, that's like a complete, you know, I just know a lot about other stuff now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I've been studying computer science for maybe 5 years.
Yeah, maybe I just wanted to ask just some other things just related to kind of like life in general. I mean, do you have any big like bucket list things that you recommend everyone doing? Or just like, or, you know, what other things you do with your free time these days?
I mean, I think that there are a couple of things that I really appreciate. And some of these things are like, I like going on walks a lot. I walk, you know, a few miles a day, usually when the weather's nice outside. And I think part of that is because like I live in the city and it's beautiful and it's fun to walk around. But I also think that, you know, I think another thing that I really appreciate are like sunsets, and I try to make as many sunsets as I can just to see like the pretty sky and stuff. I really like boba. I like EDM a lot. So I spend a lot of my time listening to music and yeah, I don't know. I really like live music. I think that part of it is just the energy that it brings, I think. But I think when I hear a song that has a melody that like really resonates with me, I'm just like, oh yeah, this is it. And I just like spend a little bit of time like appreciating that. And I also think that a lot of it for me is like live music. Like I really like going to concerts and like music festivals when they were a thing. And I think that part of it is just, part of it is just like feeling connected to the people around you, like alone but not alone, you know, in a way.
I know. I spent some time in Berlin, and they really take their electronic music seriously there, because you go to the clubs and like you're not allowed to have your phone out, that's for sure. No lights, Like they're very serious. It's like, and the people, they just go there. Like a lot of people are just, they're by themselves standing there and just like listening to the music. And this is like the big main, it's like the mainstream clubs, you know, it's not like what you expect from like a club in the United States where it's like people on their phone, like people, it's just like people actually go there to really just appreciate the music.
That's awesome.
It's really interesting. It's like nothing. Cause one of my friends, he never liked going to like bars and clubs because you know that in America it's like very, at least where we're from, it's very like, you know, just like bro heavy of like people like, you know, so he was really against it. And then like in Berlin, like we convinced him to go out. And it's funny because a lot of the Berlin clubs, if you are, if you look too much like you're like either a tourist or not like fitting the vibe of like someone that really cares about the music, they like won't let you in. It's like, you know, if you're wearing a backwards cap or something, they're not going to let you in. Like, it's like they try to find people that look like more like, I don't know, just like not like what you expect.
Yeah. But I mean, aside from those things, I also, I mean, I feel like I can't really skate too much now, but like that would be something that I would do fairly often is just go skate. And I also try to spend as much time as I can with friends and people around me, because I think a lot of like, this is going to sound cliche too, maybe, but like, I think a lot of the meaning of life, like the purpose of life is to make these connections and to be happy and so on.
Yeah, for sure. No, 100% agree. I think, I think a lot of times, and I think even for myself, people focus so much on their career that sometimes they forget to just like take some time just to make sure to spend time with family and friends and nurture those relationships. That's something that I wish I mean, it's not like I'm like 80 years old. So it's like, that's something I made a priority like in the last few years. So I really agree with that. And I think that's great advice. Any other last advice that you want to share with any of the listeners on just, you know, kind of whatever, really open-ended.
I mean, I want to say, like, just be yourself, do what makes you happy. And I truly believe, I'm a big proponent of, like, whatever you put your mind to, you can go and accomplish, or you can go, like, you'll be close. Like, I think that if you truly dedicate so much of your time and energy and passion into something, it won't, like, there's no way that that thing will stay stagnant forever. Right? Like it has to grow and it has to go somewhere. And so I just urge people to pursue their passions as much as they can, or like, you know, you don't have to quit your job or anything for it, but like, just try it out, see what happens. Like, don't be scared to start.
Yeah. I think I really agree with that. And I think a lot of times, even if you don't get the end result that you're looking for, along that journey, you are able to gain so much other tools or skills that you apply to anything else.
Right. And I think you'll see growth. Like, yeah, you'll go somewhere.
Cool. All right. I think that's, I mean, it's been over an hour. So,
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks everyone for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Of course, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please feel free to email Dominic at whyyouknowdoctor.com. Until next time.